On this episode of The Edge Podcast, Michelle McCauley, Senior Vice President of Human Resources and Principal at Apex, joins ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery for an in-depth conversation on navigating change management challenges, trusting leadership through change, and going after the career path that you want. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, the founder and CEO of ClearEdge Marketing. And today on our Edge podcast, I am thrilled to have Michelle McCauley, the SVP of Human Resources and a principal at Apex Systems. Michelle, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, you've been with Apex for nearly 20 years, pretty much your entire career in the staffing industry, starting as a recruiter. I guess first tell us how you got into the recruiting and staffing industry, and then something that is a little bit unique is how you transitioned from recruiting into HR, and then perhaps expand a little bit on what HR means to Apex.
So before I started in staffing and recruiting, I worked my way through college in retail, and I had moved my way up to an HR manager in the retail environment and had got married, had one daughter who was two at the time and could not go with the retail hours any longer. So I was looking for other options, and I had a family member refer me to speak with the three founders of Apex. So I went in for an interview having no earthly idea what IT staffing was at the time. I knew I wasn't necessarily IT savvy, so I wasn't sure what they were going to be able to do with me, but I interviewed. And I interviewed with two of the three founders in the little tiny Richmond office at the time. And I don't know that I still had a great grasp of what they were doing, but I knew they were really excited about it. And just the passion that the two of them exuded around what they were doing, I knew I wanted to be a part of it. So I literally took a 50% pay cut to go to work for Apex and started off recruiting in the sales office. Doing the technical recruiting. I learned that, did that for a little under a year and was transitioning to move into the sales role. And they approached me with the opportunity to start our internal recruiting or corporate recruiting department, knowing that I had a background in HR. So I started there, and then I worked my way up. I was the one person doing that. At that point, we had probably five offices. When I started with Apex, we had three. So I started recruiting, doing the internal recruiting, added one person there, and then gradually worked my way up through other roles in the back office, whether it be benefits and compensation, training and development, and just added. And then I also helped with marketing along the way, whatever needed to be done as the company was still relatively small and growing. And all along the way, every single little piece I helped with helped me understand the business better. So 20 years later, here I am, Senior Vice President of Human Resources, and I learned the business as I grew through it.
So a true business partner. And while you took a 50% pay cut to take the job, that's really believing in the company and their vision. And we'll talk a little bit about the first time I came across the three founders as well, and I can see why you were so intrigued and wanting to be a part of it. You started out very early in the company, and one thing I wanted to point out, when you and I first met and you were sharing your career story with me, I thought something was really interesting in that early on in your career with Apex, you were actually overlooked for a promotion and someone from the outside was brought in. And You stuck it out for 10 years while that person was in that role. And then once they were gone, decided, you know what, I'm going to go for it again and get that role. And obviously now you're an SVP in the company and the rest is really, really history. But tell us a little bit about why you stayed and what you learned about yourself during that time.
So that was definitely one of the toughest points in my career. It was 3 months where honestly, I was really on the fence about whether or not I was going to stay or whether I needed to look for something else. And I will say this throughout my story, one thing that stays true is that I have trusted my senior leadership and I've always had a good relationship with my senior leaders. And so I was able to talk through with my senior leadership and be angry for a little bit, and they accepted that from me, and work my way through. And ultimately, I came to a decision that it must not be meant to be yet, and maybe there was something else for me to learn, and I needed to stay still where I was, soak up everything I could, and learn from this individual that they brought in, and I would ultimately be better for it. So the themes there are just trust, and then also knowing that it may not be the right time. And again, that's been a theme. It's easier for me to look back now, you know, 20 years later and say, well, it was meant to be this way. I wasn't ready. But at the time, it didn't feel like that.
I think that's a really bold move of yours to stay, but it's a true testament, again, to the faith and that trust piece that you put in the company. And realizing, you know, there are always times where maybe we feel like we should have something and we don't have it, but kind of being bigger than that and saying, surely there's something I can learn. If there wasn't, more than likely you wouldn't have stayed as long as you did, just knowing you. However, it seemed like the right thing at the right time. And fortunately for you, having stayed, it's opened up a terrific career and opportunity. And, you know, I first encountered Apex, which I would consider one of the darlings of the tech staffing industry. They're really admired by many as a company and truly one of the great success stories. In fact, I remember it felt just like yesterday, and a couple people on my team, I know Jennifer Higgins and Jessica Castaneda were with me at the time and working with TechServe, where the three co-founders were a keynote. So they were sitting on stage and being interviewed, and everyone walking out of that just felt like, wow, they're really onto something. And that was several years ago, so still fairly early on in the company. Then in 2012, Apex was actually acquired by OnAssignment. So looking at OnAssignment, it looks like there's around 8 to 9 different brands who are part of the company. And I'm sure much of your role at the time and perhaps even today is trying to balance between, you know, maintaining the Apex culture and brand while benefiting from the whole of this new organization and all of the many brands. Many of our listeners, I know, and several of the companies we work with, they've been through significant mergers and acquisitions. I know I went through one early on in my career with Interim and Spherion, and then Spherion being bought by Randstad. So whether they've been through one or some of them listening may be planning for one or going through it right now, what would you say have been a few of the lessons you learned or that you'd take into consideration should you ever be part of that, again, that perhaps others going through it for the first time could take into consideration?
I think one of the biggest things, whether it's with the organization that you're with at the time of an acquisition or whether you're with one of the other organizations, is trust and transparency. And I think as much as possible, you know, you build trust through transparency and sincerity and explaining as you go along. And the other thing that Apex has done well, I mean, our senior leadership has built out next level leadership that they have utilized to help maintain the culture and continue to foster the culture of Apex as an individual organization, even apart from ASGN or OnAssignment. So maintaining that culture and then using that culture to help bring along whatever organization that we acquire. And figuring out the best way to have the two cultures work together. Sometimes it works to put them together, and sometimes it doesn't work, and they need to maintain their own culture. So I think it takes a little time to figure that out.
And just being open and knowing that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think that's one of the challenges we've seen is oftentimes it's after the acquisition or merger that takes place where they're just starting conversations around branding and the name and leadership and things that, you know, often in our position, we would think, gosh, that should probably be addressed before the acquisition. And I have heard a lot of stories of companies not having the right cultural fit and not realizing it until it's too late. And it almost, especially those going through it for the first time, it puts at significant risk what the company spent so many years building by just having one bad acquisition. So some people are kind of shy from doing it, but to your point with transparency and building that trust,
being key, it can really help. And then having some of those tough conversations, you know, not being afraid that, well, the transaction might not go through if we talk about that. Well, then that means it's probably not the right transaction. You need to have some of those conversations up front to make sure it is the right culture fit going forward.
100%. Yep.
So, Michelle, we originally met through Sean Hanley, and I'm so thankful to Sean, who also obviously an SVP with Apex, for those who don't know. He actually heard me present on the topic of women in leadership and technology at the AGS Partner Summit. And he introduced us one phone call in, and I knew exactly why he thought that the introduction would be so important, because you and Apex have created a very strong program for women in your company that even extends, and I would argue, I'm not sure that any other company has done this. I haven't seen it, so perhaps it is done, but extends to clients and candidates. And the program was really started by you. And I'd love for you to tell this story. So tell us a little bit about your program, which again is more robust than I have seen in most, and include how you got started with the program and why. So you've evolved the group over time. What impact has it had on your company?
So that's an area that I'm really passionate about. And I left out from my story at the very beginning about how I started working with Apex that when I started, I was the only person in the entire organization that had a child. So I had a 2-year-old, and it definitely made me different. I was anxious to get my work done so I could get home, spend time with my family. So that made me a little different. I had been through it, but I still had successfully, at that point, juggled the work life. And a lot of it was because of the support that I had at home. But I watched as we grew, and we had women who moved into the sales role in particular and struggled to figure out the work-life balance. And it was funny, every time we had a woman who would get pregnant or question whether she should even get pregnant at that point in her career, the leaders would tell her to call me, because I could tell her how to do work-life balance, because I was the only one in their mind who had done it up to that point in the organization. So I had no magic. I still have no magic. It is literally just, it's give and take. Some days you're really good at being a mother and you're really bad at your job, and other days you're really bad at being a mother but really good at your job. It's just a juggling act, and it's helping people understand that and that it's okay. So as we grew, I began to realize that we needed to have a network. If we had a smaller branch where we had a woman, maybe she's the only woman in the branch, or maybe she's the only woman who's had a child in the branch, she didn't have anybody to talk to, and we had a top performer leave one of our branches, and I didn't get a chance to talk to her until after she'd already given notice. And she told me a story about how one evening, it was probably 6 o'clock, and she had gone home, and she's just back from maternity leave. She was bathing her new baby, and the phone rang, and it was a client that she really needed to speak to. And she was really torn at that moment between what should she do. And at that point, she realized she couldn't make that decision on a day-in, day-out basis. So that conversation, and then realizing, you know, we were starting to lose some of those people, made me realize we needed to do something. So I had this idea we could put together a mentor network, and I approached our president at the time about doing this women's leadership program, and he said, go ahead, that's great. And so we started out small with a pilot program about 5 years ago, and it was literally intended just to build a network. Now, I saw the need being retaining our women who are coming back from maternity leave or trying to do the work-life balance, but it's grown to be much more than that. It's not. It's just about how women approach business and maybe do things a little differently. It's still about, you know, women trying to juggle home and work. It's business topics, like how you talk to your clients. So there's a whole myriad of things that have come into play here. But we started out with a little tiny pilot group of like 20 people. And there's an application process, but last year we had 120 women that were part of it, and we turned away probably half that amount because we just didn't have enough room. So we are looking to take it to the next level in 2019, and we're actually going to include some of the men. So what we've done is monthly mentor calls where we have small groups that speak with a mentor or a facilitator each month. We do quarterly webinars, typically with an outside speaker, but sometimes with an inside speaker, and we include alumni as well as people that are currently in the women's leadership group. And we've gotten so big now that we're going to change the way that goes, and we're going to have some of the male leaders involved in whether it's the calls or the small groups, wherever they want to be involved, because it got to the point where they were asking to listen in on some of the quarterly calls this past year's program. So it's grown. It's huge. As you said, we've done some of it with, we've offered it for some of our, you know, female consultants. Women in technology is a hot topic. So it's expand. Who knows where it's going to go from here, but it's been really exciting to see how it's embraced and how it's helped.
I love it. I, on many levels, as you know, I'm a co-founder of a group called Aura, which is Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. But what I love about it is how grassroots it was in the beginning. And first of all, I didn't know that part about you, so I learned something new today, that you were the first person to even be pregnant or have a baby within the company. You know, you started early on in a company and very young when that takes place. So I give you a lot of credit for building the program, and then also seeing an opportunity to not only have it be internal, but to impact the women who you're working with. I firmly believe, as an industry, and you know this having heard me present now, that we are sitting in probably one of the most powerful roles that can help when it comes to diversity and inclusion and acceptance, as we're not only within our own industry, which needs its own help, but also with the candidates as we're working with them on finding their next role, and also educating the buyer and the clients on the importance of it and what they can do. And the more educated you are as a company and your team, the more they can help them, and that will certainly show them a lot of value add. I also give you a lot of credit for getting men engaged. Ultimately, a lot of the topics we talk about, men would find of interest anyway and grow and learn from that as well. But also the other piece of that is we're always talking about including men in the conversation for everything we do, because they actually want to help and aren't always sure how to help or how to ask what they can do or what should they be looking out for or what could they do to impact change. So having them as part of that program is really key. And then ultimately, as companies become even more, you know, diverse and everything is great, it'll just become one united group together and make it more professional development and learning and so forth. So anyway, I feel like you should be writing so many awards and case studies and success stories over this, because it's such a wonderful program, and just appreciate being part of it. And I, as you were telling your story and the story of the mom having to make the decision, I just sat here getting chills, because it is something that parents in general really struggle with. And knowing now with the programs you have in place, if you can imagine, you know, you're able to save people and help them make the decision that's right for them and give them the tools and resources if they choose to. They don't always have to, but if they choose to do both, to be able to successfully do that. So kudos to you for doing that. So curious, I guess, on the HR side of the house, when you look at the program, if you've noticed any changes. One of the questions I always get asked is, like, re-enter when parents are re-entering post-leave, if there are, you know, making it okay that you can touch base while you're on leave, or let's say, for example, if a woman has a certain amount of time off, perhaps they choose themselves, I really don't want to take all of that time off. I'd like to do this because I'm in a fee earner role, whatever it may be, or perhaps I could spread that time out a little bit differently. Have you noticed, as you're doing this program, any policy changes or things that you're starting to think about a little bit differently on the HR side?
Definitely. And that's the one thing, being in a part of women's leadership has connected me with some amazing women in our sales organization and in our corporate office. And one of the things we did this past year is I had one of our prominent account execs actually lead a subcommittee which looked at what we call our leave for birth of a child policy and bonding leave and how we return women to work after they've had a child. And we have made some changes to our policy around income you know, the commission that they didn't used to get while they were out on a leave of absence, they'll now receive, as well as the whole subcommittee. We put together a page on our intranet that gives tips on managers on how to return someone from a leave of absence, what things to make sure are ready, how do you talk about scheduling, how do you set expectations, all of these things, as well as like outside articles and resources for not only new moms, but for new dads too, because there's, you know, it's a change in their life also. So we put together resources and we have mentors available if they'd like to talk to someone outside of the operational benefits piece of it, talk to someone who's done it. Like, there are resources there that they can connect with to ask questions around what's the difference between a nanny and a daycare. So all those things that if you haven't done it before, you it's scary, or you may not have thought about up front. So we've driven a lot of policy change, and even less than policy, just more culture change, I would say.
That's a great way to put it. It's just it's a culture shift. And in particular, we talk a lot about paternity leave as well, and having dads feel comfortable taking the time off and not feeling even shamed for doing it. It's a shame to even have to say those words, quite frankly. But they, right. you don't know who's on the other side of that relationship and what the home front looks like. And they could have a significant other who doesn't have a great program or has to go back to work. Or I know in my case, having my own company, I was fortunate. You know, my husband actually, they just changed his paternity leave program before, right, literally like the week before Grayson was born. And it helped out a lot from our family unit's perspective. I really needed that extra support and was so upset when I thought he only had, you know, such, I think at the time it was 1 week off and no flexibility throughout the year. And then they completely revamped it, which helped us as a family. But you've got to be comfortable then taking it and participating in it. And that's a culture shift for sure. So I'd love to get your opinion on something, Michelle, in our industry. And this is the topic of diversity. So while we're kind of on that angle right now, I would love your opinion on why there aren't more women in the C-suite in our industry. So we did a quick study on the top 50 staffing companies in the U.S., and it came out to be around 73% men in the C-suite versus 27% female. And it just seems as though there are a lot of women in our industry, whether it be sales, recruiters, market leaders, regional leaders. There's a lot. And I feel very fortunate through our podcast to meet so many fantastic women who are guests on this show who I didn't even know existed until we did this, and people would introduce me like I got introduced to you. So what I'm wondering in your opinion, and I realize that this view is going to be possibly different as it relates to Apex, but you're also very involved in the industry and with ASA. So perhaps you've seen something that maybe you could share, like, are they just not putting themselves out there? Does the lack of flexibility in our industry perhaps hurt us? Do you feel like maybe they don't have enough champions of people kind of helping get them there? What is it that you feel like maybe is keeping that number where it is today?
I think it's a combination of all of the things that you just mentioned and the fact that there's a tail to it, right? Things are just starting to open up and people are beginning to be more aware. Men and women are beginning to be more aware of some of these numbers. And I think it is just going to take time. But I also, another thing I've noticed is there's so much that's done outside of the office. I mean, staffing is not much different from any other sales organization. And a lot of activities take place outside of the office, and women weren't traditionally included in those. So we've seen a change in that, but I also think that's part of it. It's not just performance at work, but it's also that social inclusion that I think helps make a difference. And I also agree there needs to be more male champions supporting women in those C-level roles and really helping develop them along the way, so they're ready when the opportunity presents itself, and so they feel confident when the opportunity presents itself.
That's a really good point. On the outside of your role, we literally hosted an event last week. It was a networking event on the topic of networking for Aura in Chicago, and we had 70 minutes dedicated to networking, and part of it was
to try and get people comfortable with outside of work obligations and putting themselves out there so they have the confidence to have conversations and participate and know that they, you know, they need to be involved in their community, and that the more you are, whether it be through company sponsored activities or just in the network and you're seen as a leader, it does make a difference as you're updating your LinkedIn profile and you're involved on different boards or part of different organizations and people see you involved and engaged in the community. It does show that you're putting yourself out there a little bit more. So I think so. And to your other point, we will start to see change. I keep asking this question, yeah. And then next thing I know, someone else gets promoted into a CEO role or president role or, chief operating officer role who is a woman. So I do believe over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to happen. And innately, it'll have to happen because a lot of the talent pool coming up the rank, so to speak, are women. So it'll naturally just start to evolve on its own, which is fantastic. So.
We just have to stay aware.
Yes, exactly. Well, and keep doing like what you're doing, and you know, different companies I know we meet with in the recruitment space are trying to do the same thing. And the more awareness and help and confidence we can give them, the more likely it will be, you know, for them that they'll be able to have that too. Speaking of that, I guess if you were to look at yourself, you know, 10 years from now, and you think of the women entering our industry today, I do think it's going to look significantly different overall from, you know, not just a diversity standpoint, but part of that is, and it's interesting because a lot of the women I've interviewed on the podcast, even, you know, Joyce Russell from ADECO, who comes across as very confident and outgoing. I don't know if you've ever seen her keynote at an event or heard her present, but she just comes across so outgoing. But what I find interesting is a lot of the women I interview actually at some point in their career have struggled finding their voice or having confidence to speak up. And, you know, even you did. You mentioned it today when you didn't get the position that you really wanted, you said something. You didn't just sit back. You said something. And when the position came available, you made it known that that was important. Jesse Gunther is another great example of someone I mentioned on a lot of our podcasts, is someone who took control. She was her own career champion. While she had many champions, she first and foremost saw herself as that future leader and wanted to make sure that she had a voice and that her leaders knew that she was there. And when available, when a role came up, regardless if she was on maternity leave or in a different position, a new promotion, whatever it was, to consider her for that. So knowing that not everyone is, you know, has that voice and super confident. We hope that they continue to do that coming forward. What advice would you have, I guess, for the women entering our industry today? So 10 years from now, we continue to see that change happening.
So I think two things. One, you touched on, don't be afraid to ask questions. I don't want to give you the impression that I was this storming confident woman who, you know, walked into my manager's office and said, why didn't I get this? It was much more of a tentative conversation, but I knew I had to speak up and say something or I was going to regret it later. So whatever your style is, don't be afraid to ask those questions. And another thing is to just develop yourself along the way and don't be afraid to do other things as you're working along. So one of the things that helped me the most was doing other roles in the back office in our corporate headquarters. So whether it was part of the marketing or RFPs or whatever needed to be done, I was willing to do those things and it helped me. So I think those two things, speak up and be willing to stretch, do things outside of your comfort zone that'll help you learn and be ready when the time is right.
I think that's fantastic advice. And I feel like the point about stretch yourself and learn other areas of the company, I was recently out with a sales rep looking for a little bit of mentorship and guidance. She was hoping to be promoted into a more senior role within the market. And she said, you know, I keep taking on all of these other things and not getting recognized for it. I'm not getting paid for it. And I said to her, that's what you need to do. That's what you should be doing. Leaders take on, you know, more. I'm not saying you need to work 80 hours a week and take on more than you should. But if you step in the pit while they're doing, you know, stand-ups in the morning and you try to help lead those and give guidance when it's not there, you're going to stand out as that natural leader within that company. And just because it's not your role to do it doesn't mean you shouldn't take the initiative to try and do that. So kind of flipping the way you think a little bit about, well, I'm doing it and not getting recognized. Well, do it so you will be eventually, if you have the right mindset as to why you're doing that and the importance behind it.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about HR. My niece, Gabby, so HR is a career. My niece, Gabby, she's a sophomore at Wisconsin, and she recently spent a week in Chicago with me going on informational interviews. So originally, she thought she wanted to be a coder, actually, in technology, and she took a coding class her freshman year and hated it. So then she was really nervous, thinking, gosh, I really wanted to go into technology, but now I don't like it. So I set up about 8 to 10 different interviews for her to help educate her on all of the roles within technology and within business, because it was clear that it wasn't clear on the university track, at least, or the feedback she was getting at the time on all of the different roles. So she did a sales engineer meeting with Workday. She met with a couple of CTOs for different tech companies. She met with a product manager. She also met with marketing, and then she met with someone in HR. And after her meeting with the HR person, she said, I was really intrigued by it. I really enjoyed that meeting. And it wasn't necessarily something that I thought I'd be interested in. And just because of a reputation, quote unquote, that HR may have in a company. So for example, people may say, ooh, HR just walked in the room, don't have that conversation, or feeling like it's just about hiring, firing, and getting in trouble or something. So today, and something you mentioned earlier, you're a real business partner for the company. You understand all facets and elements of the company. And with talent acquisition and workforce planning being critical, every company we talk to, they will say, if we had the right talent, we could be more successful. We would be growing where we could. And that's really a function of HR partnering with the business. So if someone was in college, I guess, and interested in HR, how would you describe the function, and what tips do you perhaps have for others to maybe change a perception of what HR means?
So it's changed during just the 30 years I've been in HR. It was just the hiring, the firing, what I refer to as like the soft, squishy skills of dealing with employee relations issues. Truly the people side, but not the business people side. What I've seen, you know, over the last, call it 10 to 15 years, is HR really getting a seat at the table and really adding, almost acting as a consultant to the business. And what they bring to the table, the human capital aspect, the planning, it is just really integrated HR more into the business than, you know, I ever saw in my first, call it 10, 15 years in the business. So it's the perfect combination of people and those soft skills. I don't think that's wrong, but it's also the business skills, the metrics. One of the things that I've done at Apex is try to put metrics around, whether it's an ROI around training and development programs or our internal recruiting function, metrics around it that allows you to communicate the value to the business. And so we know how we need to get better. So I think it's that perfect combination of business and people and problem solving.
Got it. Thank you for that. I think that'll help a lot of people wondering about the profession and what they can do in the industry. And it has evolved quite a bit from what I've seen early on in my career. And I think people hearing more about the role it can have from a business standpoint will definitely help change that mindset. So to kind of close out, one of the last questions I'm going to ask you, Michelle, is we gain inspiration from those who have forged before us. And this is a question we often ask during our ARA events. Keeping that in mind, what is the greatest lesson you learned from someone who trailblazed before you? It could be a role model, a mentor, manager, colleague, friend, family member. And what do you want your legacy and inspiration to be to the next generation?
So I don't know if it's actually a role model, but there's been a couple of people on the way that I think have had significant impact on my development. And one of them is one of the founders. It's Brian Callahan. And it was a simple thing. It was a conversation we had one day where I was really proud of myself because I had just pushed back on something that one of our field leaders had said. And I felt like I had like a really good reply to a debate that we were having. And I walked into Brian's office to tell him about it. And I was very, very proud of myself because I felt like I stood up for myself. And Brian looked at me and said, "Michelle, here's what he just heard you say." And for some reason, that was the first time that it really occurred to me that it didn't matter what my perspective was. I needed to think about where the other person was sitting and how to phrase it so I was selling from their chair, so to speak. So as simple as that is, I still remember that, and that was a long time ago. So that was a big fundamental moment, learning how to communicate with people from their perspective. Didn't matter what I thought. Another person who was pretty influential for me along the way has been Robin Mee. I met her early on in my career, and she brought me to do a presentation with her at a conference. And I remember just how she pushed me. It was outside of my comfort zone then, and still is to a certain degree now, but she pushed me and really, really helped build my confidence in the fact that I had value and I was doing something different and something unique and something that I should be proud of. So Robin was pretty influential in my development early on, and just the fact that what she's accomplished as a female in this industry. And as far as my legacy, I think that, you know, everybody wants to be remembered for contributing something. I think I would like to be remembered for being an advocate for people and for being fair and objective. I think those are the two things above everything else. I want to be remembered for, you know, having a good business head and all those things that are important in the here and now. But I think advocating and being fair are the two things that are the most important to me.
And certainly with the Women's Leadership Program you have built, so aside from everything you do along the way for advocating for people, just the fact that you created and started that program certainly will be a legacy that stays with many as they continue out their lives in general. They learn from that program what you had the best hand in starting. So thank you for that. So we're going to end this with putting you on the spot with a little fun. And we're switching this question up a little bit because we kept asking the same thing over and over. So I'm just going to change it slightly. Tell us one hidden talent we don't already know about you that others may find surprising.
Okay, so when I am not working, which seems to be less and less these days, I'm actually pretty crafty. I used to, before I had children and I had more time, I used to have my own jewelry business where I made my own jewelry, and I also sew. So I make a lot of my own decorating. So I make pillows and window treatments and things like that. Came from the early years when my husband and I were just starting out, when we didn't have the money to go and buy that stuff. So I figured out how to make it, and I've continued it because I enjoy it.
Okay, so you actually sell the, if you have an Etsy page or anything like that, you have to let us know. I'd love to see it. It's funny, I asked this question and I need to think about one for myself, a hidden talent. That's fantastic. I would love to see your work. I'm sure it's beautiful. Well, Michelle, thank you again so much for joining us. How can people get in touch with you, whether it's your email, Twitter handle, LinkedIn profile name? How could they reach you?
Probably my LinkedIn profile is best, or email is always good. And my email address is mmcauley@apexsystems.com.
Terrific. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.